So you can only see them under like a microscope or?
That's right. That's
oh,
right.
Wow.
You have to be. I just think they're delightful and perhaps a good role model.
Great.
And then tell us more about yourself.
Sure. I fell in love with nature and natural history very early on. My mom and dad were both naturalists. My dad was our family bird watcher, and my mom was our family botanist. So I grew up between the two of them, just bouncing between looking up and looking down, and love birds or herps or whatever the thing is, that's what is going to really change the way I see. To Rich Stalkup, who was an incredible birder.
And kind of how did your growth as an artist come alongside your observing nature and being a naturalist?
Well, it's a really interesting question. When I was in school, I think my drawing ability was sort of on a par with my classmates.
Mm-hmm.
But I certainly liked drawing. I wanted to record everything that I could about the animals that I was finding and discovering. And writing was some fantastic, fantastic mentors and teachers there, and that really sharpened up my skills, and I've been took that bag of tricks and ran with it.
Jack, you kind of alluded to this earlier, a phrase that stuck with us from our last interview with you. You said, this is not about... When it gets right down there underneath the tail, it forces you to look more deeply and to notice things that otherwise you would easily miss. The drawings are one part of it. We're also using words. We're looking for the numbers and trying to quantify. All of that goes down into the journal. So the journal is not an art piece, but it's your brain on paper. It is a bridge between your own mind and whatever is happening in nature in front of you. And ideally, you're sitting there drawing, you end up just in presence of wonder and beauty. And the way you're doing that is through documenting everything onto this little piece of paper. You end up remembering
more. You end up seeing more. You end up giving yourself the time to notice the things that otherwise you never would have seen.
I have to tell a story here. I get in a zone when I'm doing painting, and I'm following your suggestions in the book. I was doing a hummingbird at one point, really being painstaking at looking at it closely. This was from a photograph. Got all through, and the only thing I hadn't noticed was its slimness. Mine came out looking about the size of a sparrow. So I titled the picture Fatty the Hummingbird and went on to my next learning experience.
That actually is a really good strategy. Goes back into being about the observations again. So writing notes, corrections and other thoughts, or maybe even on an observation that you've made, it's hard to show with a picture, but with a it ends up that a lot of the pressure of I've got to make a pretty picture disappears the minute those notes also join that picture on the page.
So how do you get a bird to stand still and not move for an hour and a half?
That's the thing that's great about drawing birds.
Oh, good.
They don't. They don't at all. And so they're constantly, they're doing their bird thing.
But birds are much more accommodating than mammals. Because a bird can fly away, they have the luxury of hanging out and doing all their bird stuff right there in front of you. Mm-hmm. And if you, unless you've got a it just moved again. What you want to do is kind of like, oh, okay, all right, new vision, new information. Let's play with that and just kind of welcome.
So when you're doing something for publication, do you, you must have a lot of different experiences with the creature before you do that.
An illustration for a book, that's a different thing than doing nature journaling.
Okay.
So when you're doing an illustration for a book, you're probably sitting indoors. You've got all of your journals open around you with any kind of relevant. The pelts of the animals near you, or maybe an antler that you found on your table. You're putting all of this information together into the drawing. Mm-hmm. It becomes this composite of all of these different reference sources.
Nice.
That's one of the pieces of that is all these sketches that you've made out there in the field.
Mm-hmm.
And you can really tell the difference between a sketch that's made by somebody who has familiarity with the organism, who's spent their time in the field looking at
much more vital if it comes from all of these composite observations.
Really feels like a kingfisher to me. I can feel that kingfisher. Like, yes, that's the kingfisher.
About the citizen science approach here in Chico, and I'm wondering how journaling, nature journaling, might be a part of that.
Absolutely. Go ahead, Jack.
Why don't you? I'll come in after you. I think we both would have some fun ideas on that.
Yeah, absolutely. We in science education in California right now, we're in the middle of introducing the next generation science standards and environmental principles and concepts in our in our teaching to students.
Scientists have figured out, much of it comes from somebody sitting on a stump and looking hard at stuff. And that's something that everybody can do. And it's also a skill that you can get better at. You can get better at sitting on a stump.
Mm-hmm.
You can get better at observing. The more you train yourself as an observer, you start to notice the subtleties and the details that the general public will miss. And you also train yourself to have the patience to kind of let your brain will kind of quickly go like, okay, there's your answer. I've got it. But then you wait. You wait for it, and you kind of stick with it a little bit more. And sometimes the journaling helps you do that. You just like, I'm going to just draw it from a different angle. And while you're doing that, all of a sudden you notice features about it that you realize, I don't understand this. This is actually much deeper and richer than I thought. And so the journaling is a fundamental core practice of science. How do you take a phenomena and pull from that discrete observations? How do you document that in a way that you can use again, and also to prevent your memory from tainting and shifting? How do you find the questions in the phenomena that's in front of you? And how can you get yourself to have the patience to find the question behind the question? Mm-hmm. And you start to do those things, and the mystery and beauty of the world unfolds in front of you.
CSU. We'll take a short break.
Sit beside a mountain.
graduate, they have this volume of work, of their observations, and the Plumas approach is to create a mountain kid identity. So creating that sense of place, creating relationship to where they live, and the evaluation work's been fascinating and so inspiring. And professional development days and teaching them how to effectively use journals with students, and it's really inspiring.
Well, there's you can start doing this at any age. Really young kids, when they draw, it's not really representational. It's usually more of a symbolic drawing. This means house, this means bird.
Mm-hmm.
But they're starting to build eye-hand coordination and make connections between things that they see and things that they're putting down on paper. Out and doing it. They would want to do it. Sometimes they would work directly in my journals, and then they got their own journals, and then that was a very exciting day for them. And then we just got this last weekend. I was up in lava beds and to the island and the edge of the pond. What if I put in a little diagram showing how far up in the tree it was nesting? What if I show a close-up of what the head looks like? What if I show a faraway view showing where it was in the cottonwood cluster?
Yeah.
All of those are different skills that you can add to your toolkit of things that you can put on the page, and then you're mixing and matching those with whatever one you think is the most appropriate for whatever. Third grade class, how to do this. The skill language in presenting this stuff was slightly different.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason that it works for both of those groups is because the skills that we're doing are real science skills. These are things that scientists really do to help us pay more attention and look more closely. It's authentic. And the kids get that, the adults get that, and the older you are, you can get more subtlety and nuance in it. But you're learning useful, fundamental thinking and visualization skills, and that is something that you can do at any age.
What tools do you take?
Once you get hooked with it, though, you'll want to kind of expand that kit. Something to add color becomes
what they are too. If you're observing, that's one of the things you're observing: the range of colors and and shades and that sort of thing.
One of the things I enjoyed about your book was you said early on, don't go out and buy a lot of stuff. You probably have the stuff you need pretty much close at hand. So many of the art books looked at say, well, get professional quality watercolors or you're doomed. And that's the introduction to the whole process, right? Whereas in your book, it comes along after people start to understand the philosophy of...
draw specific things. There are techniques and things that can help you solve visualization problems or drawing problems. Most of that you'll get just by monkeying around with. The tools which you need to get started are really minimal and they're basic. But I also recommend not getting too much gear, because the other end of the spectrum is so people will go like, well, I want to get pencils and colored pencils and watercolor pencils and maybe some watercolor. Over my shoulder so I can just grab it, go, and I've got everything that I need. I've got some pages that teachers can download, print, and glue into the back of journals, and those give you things like rulers and protractor and the Beaufort wind scale. I've also got some pages that you can download that help you kind of think about how can I get more nuance into my questions. Those aren't essential, but they're nice and they're also free.
That's a guide to school curricula. How can teachers get a copy of that?
Oh, yeah, that's Opening the World Through Nature Journaling. And that curriculum, by the way, kind of walks you through doing all sorts of field studies with your students. Nature journaler and curriculum developer who I have at the Lawrence Hall of Science named Emily Ligren, who I've teamed up with. You will also be able to download a free full text PDF of the entire book.
Okay.
But the disadvantage is it's big. It's over 200 pages of our resources and thinking about how to do nature journaling. So you might want to get the book. But if you like navigating things on PDFs, that's also there. That will make this accessible to anybody who wants it.
That's
Emily
great.
And I are also working on a teachnaturejournaling.com. That website isn't up yet, but by midsummer it will be. All of these will be ways that people can educators. This includes homeschool parents. This includes scout leaders who want to be doing with their kids outside, as well as classroom teachers from elementary school through adult learning.
So there's a journal club, a nature journal club?
Oh, that's fun, too. The Nature Journal Club is, it started off as a group of people in the San Francisco Bay Area. We'd get together once a month and go nature journaling together.
Oh, fun.
But it's grown. It's now an international movement. There are nature journal clubs popping up all over the world. There is probably one near you. There is one in Sacramento Valley. And these folks, going out and nature journaling with other people is one of the best ways to improve your skills more quickly. You'll all be in the same place. Different people will have different skills. There'll be somebody who's a really good birder. There'll be somebody who's really good with watercolor. There'll be somebody everybody's sharing ideas, and they often have really good potluck lunches. And so you can go out in the field with other people and develop these skills together. If you go to my website, and I've got a page called Find a Nature Journal Club Near You or Start Your Own. And that page has an interactive map of all the current nature journal clubs that are popping up. And so if anybody's listening to this and you've started another one and it's not on the map, you just contact me and I will put you on the map and then people can find you. We also have a conference, first conference, the Wild Wonder Nature Journaling Conference. We had this last year. It was a wonderful success down in Monterey, and we're going to be doing it again this year. People come from as far away as Japan and Australia to go nature journaling together, and we've got wonderful teachers. You can build a lot of skills It's all kind of open source resources and thinking, so you can take all this stuff back to your family, to your own Nature Journal Club, or to your classroom. We also have a Facebook page, the Nature Journal Club, and there you can see the journal pages of the, from people, about 9,000 people all over the world.
We want to thank you both, John Muir.
Jack Laws, he calls himself, and found it really pleasurable. And entertained and interested and curious. We suggest nature journaling. In our experience with John Muir Laws, he gave us a process. First of all, we had our own journals, and I just used pencil, though lots of people in the group had watercolors and colored pencil. And he assigned us to go to a place and to be in that place in nature for a period of time. The process that we engaged in was first to just observe. You write down everything you notice, everything you see. I was looking at a branch and at the bottom of a tree that had fallen out of the tree, and it was intricate and interesting. And so I wrote down the shapes I saw on it and how many leaves it had and what color those leaves were and all of the specifics that I that tree. Was it in the rainstorm? Was it in wind? Had a connects different parts of the animal kingdom. Any sorts of metaphors and connections. The other part of this is that it involves drawing. And so I did a very small, intricate piece, but then I did the larger piece, and just in sketching. And as he emphasized, as Jack Laws emphasized, it does. In your thinking. So you're going deep. You're not just trying to sweep over the top. So I had pictures that I sketched very carefully, and then kind of larger be present and to pay attention. And so anybody at any age can do this. What he had us do at the end was to give our sketch to someone else and see if they could observed and drew and wrote. And it can be single words, it can be sentences, it can be
He mentioned in the interview a third edition that's going to be coming out shortly, but he has now placed that up on the web. There's a free download. Just check at his bookstore. It's How to Teach Nature Journaling, filled with ideas and resources for teachers. Who may not have highly developed writing or drawing skills. As you can imagine, the Montessori folks have lots of ways. They suggest that you do rubbings and include those in your journal, including nature samples. And again, you could include those in your paper bag journal that you got from Project Learning Tree. group called Adventure in a Box has a printable journal template. It, for an 8.5 by 11 pages, fold in half. You can stitch them along the side with yarn or string. And there are a number of activities, very specific ones. They suggest gather 6 different insects and draw pictures of them, 5 different leaves, and put them in your journal. They also have some intriguing stuff on tracking. Time frame and creating the optimal conditions for nature to do the hefty lifting. The Population Bomb, and Daniel Blumstein of UCLA. They have written a fuel emissions, given the nature sorrow, shine on me again. I'd help you.